Easter greetings of the risen one. As has been and will be the case in churches all over the world, I would like to follow the time-honored and often groaned about tradition of beginning the Easter sermon with a joke. To remember the joke that Jesus pulled on Satan with the resurrection. There once was a town with a vacant building on Main Street. And in this town, a local citizen decided to buy the building and open up the town's first bar. Now, there were many in the town that did not want nary a bar on Main Street. They tried blocking the plan through the city council without success. Obviously, this wasn't Berkeley. Finally, they decided to hold prayer vigils, asking God for assistance. Several of the churches on Main Street gathered in their respective churches in a sign of togetherness and organized all-night prayer vigils. Desperate to rid this town of the bar, they prayed that this den of iniquity would burn down. Within the week, lightning struck the building, and indeed it burned to the ground. The owner, furious, hired an attorney and sued the churches, claiming that their prayers were responsible. The churches, in turn, hired their own attorney, and after much deliberation, the judge declared, "It is the opinion of this court that wherever the guilt may lie, the barkeeper is the one who really believes in prayer, as the church members clearly do not." Belief in things unseen, if it only were that evident. One of my good friends was leading a chapel session this past week at his church's preschool. And as was his usual practice, he gathered the children in the church and began with some questions and some answers. Now, if nothing else, he could have paid attention to the experiences of Art Linkletter or Bill Cosby. You know, kids say the darndest things. Better yet, he should have listened to W.C. Fields, who, if he didn't actually say this, he certainly believed it, that one should never share the stage with a kid or a dog because you will lose every time. In any case, my friend began the chapel session by asking the four-year-olds, "What is Easter about?" Every hand shot up. "How about over here? Easter eggs!" "Right, okay. New life coming into the world. Over there. Easter bunny!" "Okay, well," at this point he was starting to lose some of his confidence in this particular activity. "Yes? Chocolate!" "Okay, what else could Easter be about besides chocolate?" "Peanut butter!" Not a bad combination, but my friend decided one more time if he could get the answer that, of course, he was already looking for. "Really, what is Easter about? Anyone?" "Money." This really did happen just this past week. My friend then changed the question, "Why do we celebrate Easter?" And there was total silence. I share this story not because I have lost hope in the four-year-olds of this nation. No, four-year-olds simply serve as a startlingly clear reflection of what is most noticeably evidenced in our culture. These children were just telling a truth that many of us have experienced. A truth that gives reason for preachers like me to get up on Sunday mornings like this. This truth that is often lost in the fluff that surrounds Easter is that we lose this troubling, nearly unbelievable, and amazing story. And still, as peculiar as this story is, here we are. And the story still is strange. Strange, out of the ordinary, bizarre. If you came to this church this morning with questions, with some skepticism, with some doubt, you are in the right place. It's especially on days like this that we ask questions like, how does an angel sit on a stone? What happened to the body? How does a dead person breathe again? Well, you know what? I hate to disappoint, but I am not here this morning to answer those questions. It's not that I don't wonder about them from time to time. It's just that I don't believe them to be as important as another question. The question that I carry with me this morning is this. What does this story mean? And then, why does it matter? Because if the truth of this story relied on a body of evidence, so to speak, then this story would be a footnote for a cult of the first century. Friends, I can tell you this morning that something happened. Somehow those terrified followers, the ones who in all of our accounts were frightened or disbelieving, those very same followers experienced something that made them believe that Jesus, the one who had been executed by the empire and was dead, this same Jesus was now a present reality. Now here's the thing about resurrection. I cannot explain it. And what's interesting to me is that the writers of the gospel didn't either. They didn't even try to explain it. What they did was proclaim it. I suspect that their lack of explanation wasn't due to a lack of curiosity. Rather, that they knew it to be true and wanted to know what difference it meant. Having heard the accounts from those who had been there, they wanted to know, just what does this mean? For some reason, I am always a little taken aback at the reactions that we hear from those who encounter the risen Christ in the post-resurrection gospel accounts. I forget how much of my own interaction with these ancient texts comes with presupposition. I've heard this story countless times. I know the ending. Of course the tomb will be empty. Of course there is good news. Of course Jesus is alive. And this is why I need to hear the reactions of the followers of Christ every time I hear this story. Because without fail in our accounts, when approached by angels or by Jesus himself, the women, the guards, the other disciples, not once do we have record of this being part of anyone's expectations. Every time, those closest to Jesus react within a range of shock, disbelief, and what we have heard this morning, absolute fear. When I put myself into their place, attempt to enter their emotions, I understand a bit more. There are few things that you can truly count on in this life, and death is one of them. And what if you can't even count on that? Is it any wonder that they are afraid? They came looking for death. They were prepared for the tomb. It was painful. It was heartrending. But there was no doubt about it. And then this, an empty tomb, an angel in dazzling white. Of course they were frightened. Who wouldn't be? And then in the midst of their stunned amazement, the women were surprised. If you look at the text, it seems like they were almost ambushed by the risen one himself. And then we get to what I believe to be the heart of what we hear today. For what is it that Jesus says to the women as they kneel at his feet in trembling worship? Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Death in all its guises is conquered. Christ is risen. There is nothing left to fear. I was recently in conversation with some fellow followers of Christ about the resurrection, and one of us, a longtime follower, expressed his reservations about the resurrection. Angels? An empty tomb? A shared meal on the beach? Evocative stories, but provable fact? As we continued on, we asked him what it was then that continued to bring him Sunday after Sunday, year after year. And this is what he said. After thinking about it one morning recently, suddenly it came to him. He believes in the et expecto of the B minor mass of Bach. Et expecto resurrectionem mortuorum et vitam venturi seculi. Amen. And I look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. Amen. The Et Expecto is the final section of Bach's very long and elaborate setting of the Nicene Creed. Now, our friend doesn't necessarily agree with every word of the Creed, and there certainly are some sections that make him squirm. And yet, he said, in spite of all that, Bach's Et Expecto turns me upside down and knocks me out cold every time. This music sneaks up on you, emerging as it does out of an extraordinarily chromatic, tonally unstable musical bridge, as the chorus slowly and quietly picks its way through a musical jungle. Et expecto, and I look. Suddenly, the music explodes in a tremendous burst of energy, something elemental. This music is 250 years old, and yet it's just as powerful now as it ever has been. And its power will be just as explosive, if anything more explosive, 250 years from now, as long as music exists. This is what resurrection means to him, a primal force, unexplainable, far beyond words, its own thing, just doing the work of God, raising the dead to life. What I find so incredible about his experience of Bach's Mass in B minor is that the very same words that he uses to talk about the beauty, the passion, the truth of Bach's Mass, and specifically the way that Bach tells the story, somehow expressing hope in resurrection through music, this is the very same way that the faithful have talked about the good news of Jesus the Christ. Like the reverberations of Bach's Mass, this sharing of the good news has been a force, an energy that has carried through millennia, telling the same truth despite plagues and crusades, empires and inquisitions. It has been passed down from generation to generation, told from the rooftops and whispered in secret, from parent to child, from guide to beginner, from lost to found. The truth is this, that somehow, by ways which we will never know, Christ is risen. Without provable fact or irrefutable evidence, Christ is risen. In spite of death's claim to dominion, Christ is risen. It is this truth that makes all the difference in our world. It is this truth that exposes the lie that is told by dictators, by abusers, by exploitative economic powers. It exposes the lie that you must fear me. It is this truth that Jesus told the women outside of the tomb. It is this truth that Oscar Romero told the people of El Salvador. It is this truth that Martin King told the people of this nation. It is this truth that Desmond Tutu told the people of South Africa. It is this truth that we proclaim this day. Christ is risen, and there is nothing left to fear. Whether you have just begun this journey of faith today or have walked this path for many years, there is nothing left to fear. Whether you are bound by life's uncertainty at this moment or freed by possibility beyond horizon, there is nothing left to fear. Whether your life is just beginning, or you can see the end from here, there is nothing left to fear. Thanks be to God, friends. Christ is risen. There is nothing left to fear.